The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Local residents of Brittas in Dublin are seeking orders to remove a set of modular homes that were allegedly built in the area without any planning permission. 28 homes have already been constructed, with foundations laid for an extra 12. The developer is claiming the project is exempt from needing any sort of planning permission, but locals say the homes have caused drain blockages and sewage overflows. Joining me to talk about this is Mary Carolyn, Legal Affairs Correspondent with the Irish Times. And with me in studio is Orla Hegarty, Architect and Assistant Professor at the UCD School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy. But first of all, Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Can you talk us through this story? It seems like an extraordinary one that so many units can pop up and it's only when they're actually up and running that there are objections raised.
Well, there's a history to this. South Dublin County Council apparently wrote a warning letter to the developer in August. The developer is Brannock Developments. It got a registered address at Thomastown in Carra and Kildare. And it wrote to them in August and gave them a deadline to respond by September. And it's not clear what exactly the response was, but the council were in court last week looking for orders to stop works at the site and to remove them. And they say there's no planning permission for this at all. They say the site used to be the site of a mobile home and caravan park, which apparently is very dilapidated. And what the council say is happening is these works, which apparently have been ongoing since August, are erecting an entirely new development, and the site is subject to an entirely new change of use. They say there is no planning permission, that they need permission, and they totally dispute the developer's claim that it's exempt this development and essentially a renovation and upgrading of existing facilities. And that's really the dispute there.
Okay,
and
I mean,
local residents support the council's position essentially.
Just to clarify this, you had one of these holiday home villages, I suppose, with mobile homes, which by very definition are supposed to be mobile, that you can remove them, and people do. They sell them and they move them to different places. That's the way it was in the past. And this developer, you're saying, he's claiming that basically he is replacing like with like, that these are similar to what was there, and therefore the development is exempt. Is that that's the contention?
That seems to be the contention. Now, what happened last week, we heard from lawyers for the council and we heard from lawyers for the local residents. But the developer's argument will really be heard in full on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But their senior counsel gave an outline and he said he will essentially just be focusing on the argument that this is exempt development. It's not an entirely new change of use. So, yes, it does seem to be in line with what you said there, Pat.
Now, the question, I haven't seen the development, I haven't journeyed down there, but I'm wondering, the houses that have been built, are they mobile? Are they true? Could they be put up on a low loader and carried away somewhere?
Well, photos were put before Judge John O'Connor at Dublin Circuit Civil Court, and they certainly seem to be some kind of structures that have a level of permanency, and that is what the council is arguing. Like Stephen Dodd for the council said that they're entirely different structures in terms of their design, and he used the words permanent nature compared to what was there before, which apparently was quite dilapidated mobile homes, and in some cases there were no mobile phones, homes or caravans on the actual sites. And they also say that they're constructing foundation for these. And Mr. Dodd said that they're masonry structures with an entirely new type of roof. And they're much larger structures than the mobile homes and chalets that were on the site previously. And he insisted this isn't renovation, it's not improvement, it's an entirely new type of development and an entirely new type of use.
Yeah, most of these mobile mobile homes, which are truly mobile, as I say, they can be delivered on a low loader and removed on a low loader. They tend to be made of very light materials. I mean, they're maybe wooden frames and aluminium cladding sometimes, or maybe timber cladding. And they don't have an exceptionally long life, although many of them have been there for decades and used by families again and again and again right through the generations. But here we've something different. And even if something is modular in the sense that it might be delivered, once it's kind of fixed to the ground and fixed to foundations, it becomes something other than mobile.
Yeah, well, you'll appreciate I can't comment
sure,
on that
yeah.
because the issue has to be decided by the judge. Judge O'Connor was at pains at several stages of the proceedings last week to point out that what he had to decide was a legal issue. Is this exempt development or not? And while he appreciated the concerns the residents were raising about the effect of works on the road from August, where they were talking about lorries travelling up and down what seemed to be a narrow rural road, and creating drainage and sewage issues. And there's also issues raised both by the council and residents about wastewater treatment. The judge said what he has to decide is the legal issue. Is this exempt development? Does it amount to what the council say, an entirely new development?
Yeah, and according to some testimony from the council, some mature trees were raised to the ground. Now, if you want to do that, you have to get permission. Normally, there's a survey and trees are marked either suitable for removal or must definitely be maintained on site. And I'm sure that will be raised in the testimony.
Yes, there was. The council did focus on the number of mature trees that were felled to the ground. And the local residents had observations about all that as well. And part of the concern to the council as well was that this area is zoned for protection of views of the Dublin Mountains, among other uses. And that was one of the big concerns raised in terms of whether there was a material contravention of the South Dublin County Development Plan.
Okay, very good, Mary. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Mary Carolan, Legal Affairs Correspondent of the Irish Times. We're looking at the other aspects of this. Orla Hegarty, Architect and Assistant Professor at the UCD School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy. Orla, what do you make of this?
Good morning. It's an interesting case. People always catch on to these unusual planning cases because sometimes it might seem the issues are trivial to people, or sometimes it might feel that there are other more important things. But from a planning and from a local authority point of view, sometimes precedent is what's important. You know, if you turn a blind eye to one,
yeah.
you then have a much bigger problem.
So what are you allowed to do in terms of refurbing without going for new planning?
Well, just from the media reports on this, it seems to be sort of selective in its use of language. Yes, you can generally refurbish.
You can put in new windows, for example,
yeah.
if it's not in a sensitive architectural area, like a Georgian area or something.
Yeah, planning is often very much about context. You know, something
yeah.
that happens in a street in Georgian Dublin might be very, very limited. Everything down to the joints on the brickwork might be important. But in a different area, generally, people can paint their house, they can change their windows, they can replace their guttering, and they can do small extensions. So it is very dependent on context. This seems to be interpreting the rule around refurbishment as replacement.
Okay,
you know,
so
new buildings on the same roughly site.
And this is obviously a legal matter that the judge will have to adjudicate on. But basically, for example, if you're refurbing your house, but if you manage to knock down everything bar the front wall, for example, the facade, that's not a refurbishment.
No, it's not. And in fact, you do need planning permission to demolish a habitable house. And there have been cases where people have demolished the house, whether deliberately or accidentally, and have had found themselves in a really difficult situation because they had demolished it without permission. The other issue here would be a point of planning, which is intensification of use. So if you have a quarry, for example, you can't double the number of trucks going to it. That's called
okay.
intensification. So they would be, obviously, if they've increased the size of these units, they're increasing the number of people. If it's becoming a 12 months of the year occupancy, they've increased the loading on the local services.
So anyway, it'll be interesting to follow that in the courts, because there'll be people saying, oh, the housing crisis, we need as many houses as we possibly can. But you still have to develop sensibly.
Well, you have to make sure that there's capacity there, whether it's the drainage, the sewerage, the roads, whether it's safe to turn onto the road. There are a lot of other issues that the local authority will be looking at.
Now, here's something that we've read about, that there are loads of planning permissions ready to go but not being built. Do you have an understanding why that is?
Well, I think sometimes people think planning permission is the very last step before you go on site. It's not really. Planning is what secures your value on your land. So getting a permission on a land increases the value of that land. Whether you develop it and you crystallise your profit is another day's decision. So we have a lot of planning permissions out there, and there are often a lot of planning permissions that go unbuilt. There are a lot of repeat applications, particularly as we've seen the last few years changing standards. It encourages people to put the brakes on for what they were doing and go back for more. And we've seen a lot of that over the last
This is all supposed to stop under the new regimes that, you know, once you have what you have, you either build it or you lose it. I mean, that's what's supposed to happen.
Well, we variously, depending on what year, we hear people saying use it or lose it. And then we hear what the government did this year, which was extend planning permissions. And then we get these changing standards all the time. So this chopping and changing is really detrimental to the whole sector.
And it means that people are going to hang on and I might get another two stories on this block. You know, government will change their mind again.
That's absolutely it. And even if it's reducing amenity space or balconies or smaller rooms, the people who are the winners here are the landowners, not the people who are trying to develop. Mm. Because if you had a permission and you're ready to go and the standards change, you might find your funding is withdrawn until you change.
Now, the judicial review controversy, they're saying, oh, that these are what are holding everything up. And you can understand in key infrastructural areas where, you know, whether it's Metrolink or whether it's a water treatment plant, that it's kind of scandalous almost that these are delayed because they're so badly needed. But the number of judicial reviews, you say, has decreased.
Yes, we've seen a lot of information from government saying that judicial reviews are up 30% this year. That's not the case. And it's hard to know where they picked that number from. I got some extra information that showed they had taken account last June and made an estimate for the rest of the year. But that hasn't played out in relation to their estimates. So the number of judicial reviews are actually down this year and trending down. So the justification for saying that the courts would be flooded just doesn't seem to be there.
Now, the question of what happens, a judicial review is started, maybe permission is given for it. And then we saw in the case of Metrolink where it appears the residents are happy to enter into some sort of mediation because, you know, they don't like being tarred, I suppose, as the troglodytes trying to stop great development that the city urgently needs. Is that something that should be more enshrined? You know, before you get to judicial review, you have to have a mediation.
Well, the whole purpose, I suppose, our thinking in our planning system is early participation. So it allows that low stakes, early negotiation where people have time to change proposals, deal with local issues, maybe get more information locally that they didn't have to hand when they were putting together the design of the scheme. You know, without getting into the local issue in Ranelagh with the residents, there were a lot of works done there in 21-22 without notification and without planning permission. So obviously there's been an issue lingering maybe since that time, but it's very welcome to see a mediation. And I think a lot of these issues just need to be sorted out earlier and not escalated. And the reason we had so many judicial reviews over the last number of years was because that fast-track planning system was brought in for housing, which excluded early participation.
There's an extraordinary situation whereby under the Strategic Housing Initiative that if you had 100 units, you went straight through the planning process. You didn't have to talk to the council, you went straight to what was then on board Planola. But the wrinkle in that was that if you went in with 101 units, for example, and then you were downgraded to 80 by the board, you still didn't have to go to the council.
Well, that was one problem. The other one was that Bord Pleanála had always worked as a little bit remote from everything, and they were very, very careful about governance and transparency, and things were done in writing. But when the strategic housing development came in, they opened the door to developers to come in and negotiate, and that was really the beginning of a lot of the problems there.
Yeah, I mean, developers going in and out of Marlborough Street, they were all matey with the people there, and that is not a healthy situation to be in, that the regulator, i.e. the board, is pals with the developers and purely by contact.
I think it crossed a line and it obviously damaged public trust in the organisation as well. And suddenly there was a lack of transparency about what decisions were being made and who was making them.
I mean, it brings you back to the pub in Parnell Street and the councillors meeting up with developers in Conway's pub after council meetings. It smacked of that. Now, we've moved away with Uncommissioned Plan Óla, and we hope that the governance there is going to be pristine and exemplary. That's what we're hoping.
But we need constant vigilance around these things. I don't think people realise how much money is involved in the whole area of land development. What can seem a very minor decision can be extremely lucrative for people. So things that maybe look like they're helping the sector can actually result in windfall profits for people that are enormous. And any windfall profits that go on land ultimately are paid in mortgages and rent.
So the punter pays always.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, the question of vacant properties and so on, how can we accelerate the process of freeing them up? I mean, the money that is being on offer in the Dublin area, you'd be very quickly over the limit in terms of trying to refurb a two-year-old property that is now derelict. But it could be, because of its location alone, it could be worth far more than would attract a grant. And yet, in order to do it, you need the money.
Yeah, I would question the thinking behind limiting the grant. Obviously, if you pay more for property, maybe you're even more stretched and you need the grant even more than somebody who's bought a property for 200,000, maybe further out from the cities. And also, I'd question it in relation to the grant assistance or the subsidies that developers are getting to build apartments, because in cities now that can be up to 144,000. And clearly, an apartment development is a much higher carbon footprint than refurbishing. So, leveraging that money into refurbishment would be a lot quicker and a lot more sustainable.
You know, they've been talking about a dilution of standards and we know in terms of no balconies for some apartments, which when the next COVID comes along, I mean, no fresh air for people that are confined literally to their cell, which is their small 35 square metre apartment with only one aspect of light and so on. That kind of thinking at the diminution of standards. I mean, where are we going with that?
I think the justification for it is completely flawed. We keep hearing the justification is to make it affordable. It's not to make it affordable, it's to make it more profitable. People are just being offered less and less for the same amount of money or increasing amounts of money. If we look around what people are doing in Europe to make sustainable cities, they're building proper housing. And our problem
now, what is proper housing? Because apartment living is quite the norm in urban Europe. Now, not so much if you go outside Amsterdam, for example, beyond the outer ring of the canals, you'll find housing very much like you find in Ireland.
You will, but you'll find in Amsterdam and in the Netherlands that it is very, very carefully planned. You'll find that there are cycle routes, that there's safe places for children to walk to school. You'll find primary schools within a certain distance of all housing, secondary schools within a distance, shops within a distance. It might be housing on individual plots, but it is very carefully planned and we're not doing that.
You know the way we've changed the regs in terms of the number of lift shafts that an apartment block might need for the number of apartments. Sometimes the rules maybe are inhibited, like the idea that someone on the sixth floor, that apartment should be wheelchair accessible. Why not say all the ones on the ground floor are reserved in social housing, for example, for people who have mobility issues?
Well,
so do you need to make every apartment suitable for every possible applicant?
The most sustainable housing is lifetime housing. You know, home is a lot more than a bit of space and people don't move every time their needs change. When people are saving up for a mortgage, a lot of them are planning for family housing for the future. They're not planning for their immediate needs now. The level of disability across a person's life where they need more space is actually very high. You know, people who are pregnant, people with young children, whether you're on crutches for a few weeks, you know, whether you have guests to stay or you have a need for a carer, to make lifelong housing that little bit more generous is actually much more sustainable than isolating people with disabilities to the availability of
Except they
of
keep
housing.
On telling us that if you've got a big place, you've got to downsize, make room for the next generation of children. So you're in a local authority apartment with three beds. You're on your own now. Get out. Move somewhere else. You know, that's what they're telling people.
Yeah, I think some of this simplistic talk about right-sizing people is kind of naive. I mean, obviously, local authorities would like to manage their stock better with their tenants, and they have an opportunity because they're their tenants. But the idea that we would capture all of the private property in the country and move people around is kind of naive. And also, the price of new-build apartments in Dublin is way past the level you would be able to buy from selling a house in Dublin. So the idea that you could ask people to sell their three-bedroom house in Dublin to downsize to an apartment is kind of a nonsense when they couldn't afford it.
Yeah, and where they'll have less, if you like, amenity within their home than they had before. The question of the money that goes to developers, and this has been the government's big strategy. I was talking to a taxi driver, believe it or not, called David, and he had this theory. Give it to the small builders, finance the small builders. They then build. They get a bonus for building well. The person who borrows pays the builder then pays back the state, and so it goes round and round and round.
Absolutely. The only way out of this crisis is to build capacity in the construction sector. And what we have at the moment is the government enabling larger entities to really control the system of production and to control the output. And they're just going to control the output to the level of price that they want. We need proper competition, and then we would get better quality housing because they'd be competing on quality as well.
This tax drive is very interesting because he had loads of things like incentives for Irish Water to make connections, give them 10 grand per unit, incentives for ESB to connect homes, give them all incentives, have snagging for the builders. And if they do well, they get a bonus for doing well, for doing the house out of a certain quality. It all seemed, I mean, there'd be a certain amount of attrition for government. It wouldn't be free for the government.
Well, I think
even though it's circular, it wouldn't be entirely free. But it sounded to me like a very good way to go forward rather than depending on the big players.
Absolutely. I think that fear of attrition is part of our problems. And the idea that we're going in a direction that will solve the problem is wrong. We're exacerbating the problems by pouring money into the system without building capacity and without fixing the difficulties in the system. So there is no strategy for affordability now. I've heard people say that the strategy is just to wait until wage inflation comes up. That's very bad for the economy. And without a proper affordability strategy that goes back to what does it cost for the bricks and mortar, the small builder? We're not going to get out of this crisis.
Okay, Orla, look, thank you very much for all of that. A bit of a run through our current housing problems prompted by what's going on with that disputed illegal development, perhaps, in Britis in County Wicklow. All that will be resolved in the courts in the coming days. But Orla Hegarty, who is Assistant Professor of Architecture at that school in UCD, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.